Welcome to NGA Notable Lectures, a podcast offering a deeper understanding of all things artistic. Artist Rachel White-Reed has made casts and drawings for more than 30 years in an effort to define the space between positives and negatives, public and private, manufactured and handmade objects, always with concision, intelligence, beauty, and power. At the National Gallery of Art, an unprecedented and comprehensive survey exhibition of White-Reed's celebrated career introduces a new generation of audiences to her work, which addresses how we live. To close the symposium, held on October 26, 2018, in conjunction with the exhibition, Helen Molesworth wove themes found throughout the program into extemporaneous remarks before inviting the day's speakers for a panel discussion. In addition to summarizing the talks, Molesworth mused on ways White-Reed produces work out of paradox. The endlessness of casting, according to Molesworth, evokes both loss and fecundity, while the artist's use of household items reproduces and publicizes objects associated with privacy. The symposium ended with a panel discussion among all the speakers.
I want to thank Molly for inviting me to be here today, for bringing us all together, and especially for bringing so many artists to talk about Rachel's work. Her work is clearly as resonant for people making things as for those of us who think about what people make. And that, to me, is always a sign of a great artist, actually, an artist that other people feel in dialogue with or don't even know they're in dialogue with, but are in dialogue with or are stealing from. In the great history of artists are the best thieves. It's interesting to see Rachel's work in this context. As Molly alluded in her introduction to me, the time I've worked with White-Reed's work in the most engaged way was in an exhibition called Part Object, Part Sculpture, which tried to imagine a history of sculpture that was somewhat willful, where minimalism didn't exist. And I was really interested in casting and thinking about the bodily metaphors and relationships to casting, thinking about the body as its own kind of sculptural producer. We make casts of things every day. And women's bodies, of course, can engage in this incredible act of replication and reproduction. And I was interested in those kinds of illusions between artistic creativity and human fecundity. But now I find walking through the show and reading the exceptionally good catalog that rather than think about White-Reed's work in relationship to reproduction, I found myself very much thinking about it in relationship to death. And that's probably says as much about myself and where I am and perhaps where the culture is. When I first encountered Rachel White-Reed's work at the MCA Chicago in the 90s, I didn't know that we were in the Anthropocene. And now I do, and I feel that very strongly. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with that term, it's what many scientists believe the kind of geological period we are in is called the Anthropocene. And it's defined as being the period of time in which human presence on the earth has changed the earth demonstrably and perhaps irrevocably. And so we exist in this period of the Anthropocene, and I've become very curious about the role of art in the Anthropocene. And I think White-Reed today opens out onto many of those questions, because if one of the things historically in the West art has done is allow us to have fantasies of eternity, to allow us to have fantasies that we could make something that would persist into time, exceed us in time, then what does it mean to be an artist in the Anthropocene and to perhaps realize that the work that we make now might not make it into a certain kind of time? Like, what does it mean to have that potential end of things capping how we think and how we feel, and changing our internal conditions of possibility. So one of the things I think is so interesting about White Reed's work, when I think about it in relationship to death, I also think about her work in relationship to eternity. And I think that might be partly from the drawings and her the way she deploys graph paper in so many of the drawings, and the way the grid portends, on the one hand, many of us believe in the grid because it's the ultimate sign of democracy, each square equal to every other square. But the grid is also eternity. It implies a kind of infiniteness. Its logic leaks out of all four sides, and maybe if you're thinking three-dimensionally, all of its sides. And that endlessness, and then of course the endlessness that comes also from casting, so that her drawing practice and her sculptural practice are both toying with, on the one hand, this reproductive quality, but also the eternal as a kind of dead eternal, not a living eternal, but a dead eternal. The other thing that strikes me very strongly upon this encounter now with White Reed is how for many years I was so seduced by the surface, seduced by the ability of her plaster to grab every little thing and the intimacy of that texture. But now I find myself haunted in a way by the obdurate heaviness of the plaster, the deathliness of it, and the ironic or counterintuitive gesture of turning rooms inside out that produces an object with no interiority. So that interiority is made external. But where does, I'm haunted by like this dumb pedestrian question all of a sudden, like where did the interiority go when she wrapped it around the exterior of a thing? And if works of art are also models of subjectivity in some way, what would it mean to encounter this room of things without an interior? Is that also a way of encountering things? Is it a way of talking about a lack of privacy? I got all tripped up on interiority and privacy in the last few days and thinking about the work and wondering what is the status of the private in White Reed's work. She's taken such private things, mattresses, hot water bottles, rooms of houses she grew up in, rooms of famous buildings sort of secreted away, and made them public. And in so doing, what happens to the private? What does it mean to make copies of things that are private? Like, it has this quality of privacy somehow gone away? And then thinking about those incredible bookshelves in which, you know, the quickest way to get a glimpse of somebody, if you're me anyway, there's like two things you do. You read the spines on the bookshelf and you surreptitiously open the medicine cabinet in the bathroom. I'm not proud of the second one, but they feel to me connected in White Reed's work. This not so much a refusal, because there's a kind of an aggressiveness there that I never feel in White Reed. I always feel great tenderness about these problems, but an inability to read those spines on the book. What does it mean? Right. What happens to all those versions of knowability and privacy? I personally found myself somewhat then, of course, narcissistically, because I'm thinking about death, I heard it in everyone's talk. So in my attempt to sort of sum things up, wait, I'm getting to my sum up page. Here we go. Mari's amazing walk through the history of the plaster cast and this extraordinary colonialist desire to bring the world, you know, to home, to bring the rest of the world home, to have the rest of the world be available simultaneously and in real scale. I mean, that is a crazy desire that it seems to me is quite replicated in this object. Nothing's at scale, but everything's in your pocket, which might be another way of talking about where did privacy go. And I have just one little funny anecdote that I told Mari the first day of work for myself at the Harvard Art Museums. As I was being led to my office on the very dark fourth floor of the old Fog, the unrenovated Fog, the lights weren't on in the hallway on the way to the office, but the hallway was lined with plaster casts. And I had just come from a contemporary art center, and I remember thinking very acutely to myself, don't cry now, you can cry at home. Which is a way of saying I really understand Joseph Albers' iconoclasm of like, oh my God, what are these big, dead, dirty plaster things hanging around, portending this unbearable narrative of history, right? The unbearableness of it. Which then, of course, I heard echoed again in Ada's performance work and her thinking about plinths of sculptures where the statues had been removed, Confederate statues that, you know, made an honorific out of the Confederacy, had been removed, and the deep psychic pull of what it means not to have taken down the plinth too. Right, and I think her gesture of a figure dancing on top of that plinth really speaks to the availability of that plinth to still act, whether the thing is there or not, and the kind of deathliness of history, that taking down the sculpture doesn't get you everything, right? And then thinking about Kelly's use of yoga and the yoga mat as a sort of sculptural base, and thinking about the great act of yoga is, of course, shavasana, right? Corpse pose. And yoga is many things, but one of the things it is it's a meditative practice that leads you toward a good death, right? When you are in shavasana, you practice being basically chill about dying when you're in corpse pose. And then there was Tariq's extraordinary, those three questions that you asked us to ask ourselves, and then you implied that the self is a negative space in the face of those questions. I found that a beautiful way of thinking about how oppressive the I is and the self is, and like what it might mean to try and be rid of this I or rid of this self. And of course, death is also it's the easiest way out of the I. And the way existentially, of course, death shadows that question, who am I, right? You only need to ask that question because you're gonna die. And I really loved that thing that was happening there. And then there was this beautiful, like every artist should clearly have a film with no sound. Like that's the most incredible way to see work you haven't seen. That's a great idea. So just like note to self and everyone in room. Like, I mean, it's just, that was really great. But one of the things that I was so curious about was I thought like, oh, and this is where my death argument ends, because Christina Iglesias is clearly interested in the extraordinary fecundity of nature. And so, right, she's using casting as this, you know, in this fecund way, Then the weaving came in, and I was really interested in the way in which both weaving and casting are models for reproduction and models for a kind of endlessness, but that they get you very, very different things because, of course, you can suspend the weaving. And all of the heaviness and obdurateness of white reed that I'm so drawn to, all of a sudden there, its antithesis is in Christina's work and this sense of floating. But I think that would be a too easy read of that work, because the labyrinth that she's dealing with is also a kind of, well, I'm a very claustrophobic person, right? So labyrinths make me very, very nervous. They are the impossibility of a self to place itself in space and time, right? They are confounding that operation. And Christina talked about the kind of impossibility of being in reality. So the labyrinth is a kind of spatial death. But really then Lynn brought it back to the Anthropocene in her final comments about that work, in which there is a way in which some of that, particularly those fountains at the end, do begin to imagine a world in which we humans are not present. And so this memorial or this monumentalizing that White Reed is engaged in, that Christine is engaged in, and so many of the other artists here as well, is about trying to negotiate this profound absence that soon will be us. And what kinds of marks might we be leaving in the wake of these many forms of death, both actual and metaphorical, that are happening to our culture at this particular juncture. And that white reed is the generative source of those sorts of conversations doesn't, I suppose, surprise me. It only confirms for me her extraordinary capacity as an artist to think about some of the things that are most important about being human, which is who are we, where did we come from, and what are we leaving for others? So with those big questions on the table, I definitely feel the need for a team. And so I'd like to ask everyone who has already spoken to join me up here on the dais.
This has been a National Gallery of Art podcast.